Welcome to another beautiful Sunday. What should we talk about today? There is one of Baba's sayings. Even a moment of contemplation is enough. Even a moment of contemplation. The true contemplation happens when we stop from our usual way of being, take a step back and really look at ourselves. Not try to justify certain way of being or trying to tuck ourselves into what feels right. Just looking at a bigger picture. What is the purpose of this life? What am I going to accomplish in this life? What am I aspiring for? What am I living for? That kind of contemplation. Just a moment. Amazing things can happen in that moment. How honest I am to my higher self. There is another saying of Baba, tell the truth, you will receive strength. Tell yourself the truth. You don't have to tell it to anybody else. If you are telling the truth to yourself, you will receive strength, and that strength comes from within you. What is my truth? What do I live for? What am I aspiring for? The day we begin to live our truth, if we truly begin to do Shakti Upasana, things that look like big sacrifice just fall off, lose their importance. Things that look like a big obstacle just roll out of your way. They lose their grip over you. All these things are experienced because of our attachment to our ego. When you go, start working with a teacher, with a guru. That's the first thing guru points it out to you. That's the first thing the guru begins to work on you, on your ego, the image that you think of yourself. Image is nothing but imagination. It's just imagination. The way I think of myself, I don't think anybody sitting in this room think in the same way. We project lots of our own things on the other person and we see ourselves that way. And like Baba says, you are not what you think you are. When we begin to pay attention to that moment of contemplation, sometimes things become so clear, very clear. Shish diye yadi guru mile, tobhi sasta jaan. It is said that even after giving your head, if you find a guru, it's still a bargain. Yah tan visaki tokari malamutron ki khan, shish diye yadi guru mile, tobhi sasta jaan. This body is filled with so many vices. It's the mind of vices. O seeker, even after giving your head, if you find a guru, it's still a bargain. Guru is not somebody sitting on a throne looking holier than thou. Guru is your own higher self, the one that you come in contact with during that moment of contemplation. The guru that is boundless, that's limitless, that's divine itself in you. In order to come in touch with that divine self, that ego must be looked at. Whatever we think of ourselves is nothing but ego. Some part of ego or there has to be something that keeps our body healthy and keep us going, keep us engaged in the society. That's necessary. But there is a whole lot more that's totally unnecessary, that we keep caring, we keep imagining, and we keep building on that imagination. Ego is a big topic. Many books have been written. I remember for the first time when I went to India with Baba after having spent very productive and important years with him. It was important for me, but in those days I was thinking that I was doing such an important work for Baba, and all the disciples in India were just in praise of me. I had left my business for a whole year and I was serving the Guru. So I was full of myself, that I was so important. So first night, Baba calls me up and he says, "Oh, where are you going to sleep?" And I was totally convinced that I'm going to have a room right next to the the chief disciple of Baba. Totally, that was not even in my mind. He said, "Well, when I came to this place, there was nothing here. You know that slab that you see? That's where I slept on. You should sleep on that." And that slab had, it was just covered with things, and mosquitoes and all kinds of things were there, and there was no blanket. He said, "Oh, you can get a couple of blankets from that man over there. Just sleep on that." So I put my bags under the slab and tried to fall asleep, but after being used to the comfort of the States and the heating and cooling, it was April, it was hot and muggy and the mosquitoes were just biting. I could not sleep. I'll lie down, sit up, walk around. Then I noticed that Baba's window was right, he had a very clear view of that rock from his room. And usually here we used to go and spend the night in Baba's room taking care of him. But in India there are so many people, and there was a line of people who wanted to go and be with Baba, the old timers. So that was not a place for me. What else should I do with myself? It was a very good night of contemplation, and it really made me stop and think. Not about myself, but look at all these people who have been in Baba's service for so many months and years, and it's time for them to go in his room and spend the night or be of service. Many things came to me. It became so clear. Before, I was so concerned with my own self-importance that I was totally unaware of others' need. Other disciples need to allow space for them, that they could come closer to the Guru. In the beginning, when he asked me to lie down from sleep on that slab, I was feeling rejected, I was feeling hurt, I was feeling totally stripped down. But in the night, there was a little comfort too, after I found out that he had a clear vision of my slab from his room. So, "Oh, maybe." Then I thought, he said, "When I came to the ashram, there was nothing here, and that was the slab I slept on." So he had also given me some little something to hold on to, some comfort. Not like just, "Okay, now get out." So the Guru also knows where your weakness is and when you may need a little strength. Just that little interaction with Baba, two sentences, were very meaningful for me to stop. And I was forced to stop. Why I'm telling you this is, if you are living in an ashram or you are around a teacher, some sentences may be offered to you. You may react to them. But again, always go back to your own corner. Stop. Look at it from a different perspective, different angle. See how it makes sense. See how it's really needed for your growth. Reacting is the first thing that happens. And see how you try to justify your own way of being, your own way of thinking of yourself, your own way of reacting to things. But if you're learning, if you have taken to work on yourself, it's very important. That's what Baba calls excessive cleverness. We begin to practice cleverness with ourselves. We try to justify our own way of thinking, our own way of being. And learning becomes very difficult in that process. And that's what the word Shish Diye Yadi Guru Milay Tohi Sasta Jaan. Even after giving your head, you find a guru, still a bargain. Head doesn't mean that you have to chop off your head. The real head is that keeps you in the same place where you are, the ego. And there are many ways in this guru-based tradition, there are many ways that have been tried and tested. There are stories of gurus that are very, from the outside, look very cruel almost. There is a story of a student when he went to work with the guru. Guru was sitting on the top of the mountain. He will send him down with a little pot all the way down to the mountain to fetch a jug full of water. And after all this toil, when he come up, when he shows up with a pitcher, Guru just looks at him and starts slowly pouring it out. Go back. So it may look very meaningless, may look very trifle, that for nothing, all this hard work. But the time when you're engaging in the process opens a possibility of some kind of contemplation. And the Guru also teaches us, pay attention to the company you keep. Not only the company of people, company of thoughts. What kind of thoughts come to your mind during certain interactions or during certain contemplation? Pay attention to those thoughts. If those are inspiring thoughts, that is the divine moment in your life. If those are the thoughts of that empower you, that give you a glimpse of your greater self, those are the divine moments. But if those thoughts are of the negative nature, they bring about negativity, resentment, fear, guilt, anger, all those things, you have to pay attention to that. And the path of the guru, guru-based traditions, love is the first thing that needs to be established. Until that love has been established, it becomes very difficult to progress on the path. That is the first step. And how that love is established? There are many ways. Some gurus do miracles, so you are in awe and you are ready to give anything you want, precious. Just total surrender because of that awe, that miracle. And sometimes we cultivate that love out of fear. Think about this, I'm just throwing these words at you. Out of fear sometimes, out of temptation, out of being able to get something. People give up their power for so many reasons. But in this, what I'm talking about, it's not giving up of your power. I never gave my power to my guru. what I felt like there was no two. There was no one to give my power to. I had total trust. And that is the mystery of world love, that there is no two. In giving you receive, in receiving you give. Wish of the one becomes command for the other. And in following that command, there is no resentment, there is no anger, there is no fear. There is merging. The drop meets the ocean. As long as we are thinking about ourselves, our own ego, our own way of being, our own way of seeing, we remain that drop. If we are aspiring to be the ocean, that merging has to happen. That bubble of ego has to pop. And Guru is not a body. Guru is a vision. Guru is that very life breath. That is why it's so important to stop, take a step back, take a nice deep breath, and contemplate your own wholeness, the purpose of life. What am I aspiring for? What am I living for? What I really want to accomplish in this lifetime? Am I being truly honest to that self? Anyway, it's a beautiful Sunday. The time that's passing is not going to come back. Every day it's passing. We have tremendous possibilities, tremendous ability to really create whatever we want for ourselves, our society, once we are ready to merge with the ocean. So I hope we all find a little time and ask ourselves, what is it that's stopping me? Look at it carefully. Because lots of times it's just like rope looks like a snake in the darkness. Lots of times. Just a rope in the darkness looking like a snake and stopping us from moving forward. Whatever your fear is, you have the strength to go beyond it. The strength is also there once you accept yourself fully, who you are. When I came on Carrigal Road in early days, I used to spend lots of time alone. Nobody was around in the very, very early days. And a lady drove in a big Cadillac. She said, "Are you Hari?" I said, "Yes." Somehow I was in my room today, and everywhere I looked, in my house, everything reminded me of death. Everything in my house, every single article in my house reminded me of death. And I'm scared. I was so scared I had to walk out of the house and was talking to my neighbor, and my neighbor told me about you, that I should go and talk to this monk. So I'm here. I think she was living next to Ronnie's mother's house. Marjorie had sent her to me. I said, "What are you scared of?" She said, "Dying." I said, "What happens after you die?" She said, "I don't know." I said, "Why are you so scared if you don't know? If you know of something, then you can be scared of, but if you don't know what's going to happen, what are you scared of? Let's think of what else is on your mind. What will happen if you die?" And she really had no idea that what was she scared about. She was just scared of dying. And I tried to ask her, "Well, just go a little further, what will happen, or who, somebody is being left behind?" And no, she didn't have anybody to leave behind, so she was not scared for them. And she didn't know what happened after death, she was just scared. Anyway, so I sat and talked to her a little bit more, and she went home a little calmer. So lots of times a fear comes in and we get so consumed by it, we don't stop and see, okay, let's see, let me put myself in that position and see what happens then. Do I have the strength to deal with it? You'll find yes. So it's always there. It's in us. It's not outside, provided we take a little time every day and look at our limitations. Go beyond it. Don't stay there. Anyway, I can keep on going, but I would love to hear what's on your mind. Does it make any sense to you?
Well, kind of an off-the-wall option. You talked about ego and imagination, contemplation, love. There's all very serious work, and not once did you mention Maya or illusion or the role of what seems real not being real. Where does that factor into all of that?
Maya is very real in our tradition. In tantric tradition, Maya is very real. It's as real as the other side, provided we associate with it, interact with it, play with it, with a sense of detachment, that it does not own us. And we get in trouble only once we get attached to it and begin to identify with it, and begin to think that I will be unhappy without it tomorrow. But if it's here and it's happening, I engage in it fully.
Meaning it's just as serious as everything else.
Or not as serious as everything else.
I have a question. Ego, as you're discussing today, are you born with ego? From the moment of birth, are you egoless then?
Not fully. Once you have taken on a body, once you have taken on an identity, that begins, the ego begins to build up on it. So that's why I think in Christianity they say you are born a sinner. I think my interpretation of that is your act of separation is the original sin. The rest of time you can spend in yoga, trying to unite. So that's what they were trying to say, but somehow it came out a little differently.
The real definition of sin is missing the mark.
Mm-hmm.
I read that somewhere.
Metanoia. I think the act of separation. So you are born with, you are born because of the ego. So there is some part of ego that's there. And there are many degrees of it, and it keeps building on it.
So you're born to get rid of your ego.
You're born with the ego, because
but
of
then,
the ego.
But then all of the time and the discipline is to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you're born in the body, right? And they say that you're fortunate to be born a human being. So that
first, let's see why you were born. You were born because of some unfulfilled desire, some unfulfilled work. Have you remembered sometimes in our talks, I think it has come up, that depending on what's the last thing on your mind, it becomes the seed for your next incarnation. No matter how big of a wish or desire it is, it becomes the cause for the next life. So the work in this life becomes that when I am taking that last breath, may I be totally at peace with what is, may I have not any unfulfilled missions, desires. So aspirations could be many, but when that last moment comes, maybe we are able to free ourselves, maybe we are able to see through it all and have experienced that totality, that wholeness. And that becomes moksha, that becomes liberation. And many yogis have said the purpose of this life is to obtain moksha, to obtain oneness with God. And the culmination of all our sadhana is towards that last breath. If I'm able to take that last breath in a state of total wholeness, nothing is missing in that moment. I am one with God in that moment. That really shoots towards liberation. And that's why the mantra practice is so powerful, that we are practicing, practicing, practicing with the hope that during the last breath I take, may I be repeating my mantra. Once you are repeating the mantra, you're not thinking of the ripe mango in the tree.
Balaji, I really appreciated the story about the slab and humility and breaking of the ego. And usually when you tell that story, you talk about when Baba had all of his close disciples, he called them in for a meeting, and then you went in and kind of banished you from the room and said, what are you doing here? That since the guru-disciple relationship is foreign to our culture, and I just want to thank you for your patience and perseverance with myself and many of the others around here, that it takes us a long time to be able to crack that coconut, so thank you for your patience.
See, Guru is not the person. Guru is the higher principle. The person who is sitting in the seat of the Guru has a tremendous responsibility that ego doesn't get to their head. And that could be the biggest downfall of a person. A person in the place of who is being the medium for the Guru's energy to manifest has big responsibility, it's a big challenge. And I just keep praying that may I be saved from that. And actually lots of times I just close my eyes and just visualize my Guru's image just sitting there, not me. I check out.
Babaji, would you say that, I don't want to misunderstand, but I think I heard you say that there, in a sense, there are degrees of this ego sense, and that I think I understand it goes all the way to this complete separation and all the fear, but back to, in a sense, something that belongs to the body itself, to the body's own survival.
Exactly.
And so it seems like that fine line, that's where it gets very gray, because of the body's need to exist,
mm-hmm.
As a vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And that the confusion or the sense of the ego is always with us on some level.
Definitely. If it totally vanished, then vanish. So there is definitely that sense there. But always looking at, how much do I really need? I think that's why the practices of the sadhus you see, they try to strip themselves down to. There is even a tradition of nagas who don't have anything on. They cover themselves with ashes. But I've also seen some nagas who have covered themselves with ashes. Look, I have nothing. I'm wearing only ashes. But their guru is sitting on the golden throne on a lotus, naked. So there is the contradiction there. So it's a very individual practice, you know. Can't really look at somebody else, we can only look at ourselves. And the very moment we begin to look at somebody else, it just changes our body chemistry right away. So it's very good and wise thing to just look at ourselves. How am I doing? What am I thinking? How am I holding myself?
And Babaji, how does the seeker, there seems like a danger of the seeker becoming over-dependent on the Guru.
Oh, yes.
I mean, I see it especially in India, but maybe it's the same here, it's just that it's a different way of displaying that. So what steps? It's easy to identify oneself with the Guru rather than your own higher self.
as long as you keep remembering, the guru is not that person. And that's what happens when, instead of looking at where the finger is pointing, we grab onto the finger and hang from it. And it happens. And it's a very fine line. And when you become so involved with your small self, then the dependency happens. But once you keep contemplating on the higher self, you transcend the dependency. You depend on the guru only when you are thinking about your personal needs, or you're somebody sick in your family, you want the guru's divine intervention, or you want a little better job, or you want this, or you want that. Then the dependency happens. But once you are focused on the higher, that's the only thing I can say. Most of the people I have seen who got totally dependent on Baba, before they even sneeze, they will try to call and find out if this was okay, you know. And I noticed that they were always concerned about themselves. And the very moment our focus goes from ourself to the greater, you'll notice that you're not limited in that time and your dependency is not on the guru at that time. Then you begin to connect with the guru in you. And that is why there is so much emphasis on a life of seva. Because in seva, you're not concerned about yourself. Does that make any sense?
Babaji, I was contemplating when Richard brought up Maya and the idea that Maya is real and yet sort of paradoxically it's a dream. And it came to me kind of that if it's a dream with an underlying life force, it seems to me that if you really pay attention to what's going on, like you were saying, kind of play with it and work with it, it seems to me that it's designed almost, or not almost, that it is designed to wake you up through the events that occur.
You can definitely look at it that way. I think once we are open to see it, then we can see through Maya. Then comes Mahamaya. There is a Maya, then there is a Mahamaya. Even the one who thinks I'm seeing through the Maya, that's a Mahamaya. Because if you are able to see through Maya, then you think, okay, now I am accomplished.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But even that sense of being able to see through is another Maya. So it's like peeling the onion.
Can you talk about grace?
Grace. Grace is always around us, provided we are open to acknowledge it. The very moment we come out of our small self and begin to see the expression of the higher in everything around us, immediately you feel as if you were just surrounded by that grace. Again, going back to the same, the more I'm concerned about the me and my environment and my way of thinking, my way of being, whenever I'm free of that, I find myself surrounded by grace. Lots of times, because of our immediate needs or thinking that this is where I need to be happy, I get so caught up in that and I want it to be fulfilled in a certain way, and if it's not happening that way, then I'm unhappy. When I'm able to see through or free myself from this limitation, all I find is grace. That is why there is so much emphasis on in the yogic traditions to not identify too much with the body and the mind, because those two keep us tied to me and mine. See, faith is the path of bhakti, right? Faith is bhakti, bhakti yoga, devotion. And what happens in devotion? The yoga happens, the union happens, the devotee merges with the divine. Oneness happens, and then bhakti bhagat bhagavant guru chatur nam bapuek. Bhakti, the devotion, bhagat, the devotee, bhagavant, God, guru. All these four are different names in the beginning, but ultimately the body becomes one. It's all one. Anyway, I will leave that for the NPR. Let's have some chai.